From February 12 to March 1, 1903, dust and discolored rains fell along the western coast of Africa, upon many parts of the European continent, and in England. The conventional explanation was published: there had been a whirlwind in Africa. I have plotted for more than 20 years in the libraries of New York and London. There are millions of persons who would think this a dreary existence. But the challenges, the excitements, the fines. Any pronouncement by any orthodoxy is to me the same as handcuffs. It's brain cuffs. There are times when I don't give a damn whether the stars are trillions of miles away or 10 miles away, but, at any time, let anybody say to me, authoritatively, or with an air of finality, that the stars are trillions of miles away, or 10 miles away, and my contrariness stirs or inflames, and if I can't pick the lock of his pronouncements, I'll have to squirm out some way to save my egotism. So then the dusts of February and March, 1903, and the whirlwind explanation and other egotists will understand how I suffer. Simply say to me, mere dusts from an African desert, and I begin to squirm like an Houdini. February 12 to March 1, 1903, dusts from an African desert. I get busy. Nature, 75-589. That some of this dust, which had fallen at Cardiff, Wales, had been analyzed, and that it was probably volcanic. But the word analyzed is an affront to my bigotries, conventional chemist orthodox procedures, scientific delusions, more coercions. I am pleased with a find, in the London Standard, February 26, 1903. It is of no service to me, especially, now, but, in general, it is agreeable to my malices, a letter from Professor T.G. Bonney, in which the professor says that the dust was not volcanic, because there was no glassy material in it, and a letter from someone else, stating that in specimens of the dust that were examined by him, all the particles were glassy. It was dust from an African desert. But I have resources. One of them is Al-Mokareb. How many persons, besides myself, have ever heard of Al-Mokareb? Al-Mokareb is mine own discovery. The dust came down in England, Austria, Switzerland, Belgium, Germany, and along the west coast of Africa. Here's the question. If there had been an African hurricane so violent as to strew a good part of Europe, is it not likely that there would have been awareness of it in Africa? Al-Mokareb, Tangier, no mention of any atmospheric disturbance that would bear out the conventional explanation. Lagos Weekly Record, Sierra Leone Weekly News, Egyptian Gazette, no mention. And then one of those finds that make plotting in libraries as exciting as prospecting for nuggets. February 14, of this year, one of the most extraordinary phenomena in the history of Australia. In magnitude it was next to the occurrences of the preceding November. In the blackest of darkness, dust and mud fell from the sky. Melbourne Age, February 16, 3 columns of reports upon darkness and dust and falling mud, in about 40 widespread towns in New South Wales and Victoria. The material that fell in Australia fell about as enormously as fell the dusts in Europe. There is no mention of it in any of the dozens of articles by conventionalists upon the phenomena in Europe. It started falling 2 days after the first fall of dust, west of Africa. It was coincidence, or here is an instance of two enormous volumes of dust that had one origin. There was an unnoticed hurricane in Africa, which strewed Europe, and dogged Australia, precipitating nowhere between these two continents, or two vast volumes of dust were discharged from a disturbance somewhere beyond this earth, drifting here, arriving so nearly simultaneously that the indications are that the space between the source and this stationary earth is not of enormous extent, but was traversed in a few days, or a few weeks. There was no known eruption upon this earth, at this time. If here, but unknown, it would have to be an eruption more tremendous than any of the known eruptions of this earth. There was a new star. It was found, by a professional astronomer, upon photographs of the constellation Gemini, taken upon March 8, Observatory, 22-245. It may have existed a few weeks before somebody happened to photograph this part of the sky. Cold-blooded scientists, as we hear them called, and their ideal of accuracy, they're more like a lot of spoiled brats, willfully determined to have their own way. In Cosmos, NS, 69-422, were reported meteoric phenomena, before the destructive earthquake in Calabria, Italy, September 8, 1905. It was said or it was announced that Professor Agamemnon was investigating. It would have been a smash to conventional science if Professor Agamemnon had confirmed these reports. We know what to expect. According to the account in Cosmos, first came a fall of meteors, and then, 3/4 of an hour later, to this same place upon this probably stationary Earth, came a great meteor. It exploded, and in the ground was a shock by which 4,600 buildings were destroyed, and 4,000 persons were killed. A volume of sound from crashing walls, in billows of roars from falling roofs, sailed like a ship in a storm. When it sank, lamentations leaped from it. Because of underlying oneness, the sounds of a catastrophe are renderable in the terms of any other field of phenomena. Structural principles are the same, either in phonetic or biologic anatomy. A woe, or an insect, or a centipede is a series of segments. Or the wreck of a city was a cemetery. Convulsed into animation, it was Resurrection Day, as not conceived of by religionists. Concatenations of sounds arose from burials. Spinal columns of groans were exhuming from ruination. Articulations of sobs clung to them. A shout that was jointed with oaths reached out from a hole. A church, which for centuries had been the den of a parasite, sank to a heap. It was a maw that engulfed a congregation. From it came the chant of a litany that was a tapeworm emerging from a ruptured stomach. Choruses broke into moans that were rows of weeping willows. A prayer crossed a field of murmurs, and was gored by a blasphemy. Tellers of beads told ladders, up which ran profanities. Then came submergence again, in a chorus. In earthquake lands, it is the belief of the people that there is a godness that, at times of catastrophes, directs them to flock to churches. My own theology is in agreement. It is by such concentrations that the elimination of surplusages is facilitated. But, if Virgin Marys were replaced by images of Mrs. Sanger, there would be no such useful murders. It is said, in the Bull. S.O.C. Astro. De France, October, 1905, that luminous phenomena had preceded this catastrophe, in Calabria. Observations upon appearances in the sky were gathered by Professor Alfani, and were recorded by him, in the Revista di Fisca. But it was Professor Agamemnon's decision upon reported phenomena in the sky that was awaited by the scientific world. From time to time, in scientific periodicals, there was something to the effect that he was investigating. Not only meteors were told of. There was a fall of dust, from the sky, at Tiriala. Explained. There had been an eruption of Stromboli. Comptes Rendus, 141-576, report by M. Lacroix, who had been living near Stromboli, at the time that, at this time of the fall of dust, there had been no more than normal activity of Stromboli. Long afterward, the result of Professor Agamemnon's investigation was published. He could find only one witness. It is not easy to think of an organic control that would beguile its human supernumeraries into manageable concentrations, for eliminative purposes, and also permit a Professor Agamemnon to conceive of warnings for them. But, if in supermetabolism, there is, as in suborganisms, the catabolism of destructions, also there are restorations. Anabolic vibrations, known to the people of this earth, as sympathy and charity, shook from pockets as far away as California, money that rebuilt the mutilated tissues of Italy. Something else that every conventionalist will explain as mere coincidence is that down from the sky came deluges upon the quaking land of Calabria. There was widespread need for water, at this time. India pitiable, as described in accounts of one of the severest of droughts. The wilt of a province, the ebb of its life is at the rate of 2,000 of its starving inhabitants, a day, into the town of Sindh. Its people shrivel, and its fields, burned brown, wrinkle with trains of dark-skinned refugees. A band of natives in a desolate copse, trunks and limbs of leafless, little trees, and shrunken arms and legs merge in one jungle of emaciation. A starving native, flat in a field, he has crawled away from the long, white cloud of dust of a trampled road. It might be hell anywhere, but there are glimpses of the especial hell that is India. Breech clout of the starving native pinned to it, a string of jewels, which, though dying, he had stolen. Long, wide cloud of dust that is a landscape girdle, and it is emblazoned with the Raja's elephants. There was intense suffering, at Lahore. All the gods were prayed to for rain. Upon the 9th of September, there was an earthquake, at Lahore. All the gods answered at once, combining their deliveries, with an efficiency that smashed houses. Allahabad Pioneer Mail, September 15. Houses collapsing in great numbers, and the occupants wandering homeless. Such an occurrence at this season is most unprecedented, and has taken everybody by surprise. Times of India, September 16. Main Street. Any good-sized American city. A dull afternoon. The barber shop and the cigar store on the corner. Much dullness. A sudden frenzy. Main Street rushes out of the town. Or a human mind in a monotonous state of smugness. There's a temptation, or the smash of a conviction, and something that it has taken for a principle rushes out of it, in a torrent of broken beliefs.